Hi, everyone. This is Robin with Tributaries. The only way out is in. Certainly a recurring theme during this half hour, but it would be a great title for a book, and it is. Anthony Prem Carlisi wrote it inspired by his own life of over 30 years study in yoga, Ayurveda, and Tantra, seeing how these three systems have been an anchor to his and his students' lives. He weaves their essence into this informative, creatively written book to serve others on this path. Prem also has retreat centers on Kauai and in Bali for practice and study. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Prem, welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
Thanks so much. It's great to finally catch up with you. I became aware of your book, oh gosh, probably over a year ago.
Yeah, you had contacted me and we're just now getting it together. Huh?
Prem, let's start out with the origin of these three systems. Did they all come from the same source that you're aware of?
Yeah. The source of these Vedic systems is from India. And they say that it's, different scholars have said that it's 10,000 years old. Now, all of these systems were not written down until, like, for instance, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali was written down around 2,500 years ago. So 500 years before Christ, somewhere around there. So before that time, it was all transmitted from teacher to student in this Sanskrit phrases and chanting, and they would learn it this way. So nothing was written down. So all these three systems, Ashtanga Yoga, the one that I practice and teach, and Ayurveda and Tantra, come from the ancient Vedas. And now they're still very useful now, even 10,000 years later.
Right.
Which is amazing.
The nature of the ancient systems and the way even the aboriginal-type societies lived so long ago, their philosophies really translate through the ages.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we all have pretty much the same body and mind. Things are sped up now. Things are moving quite quickly with all of technology and all that. Even within the last 100 years, we've seen a tremendous amount of growth and advancement with the way that our mind works and looks and things like that. And, you know, I've thought about this and contemplated how there was different societies that we heard about, like Atlantis, that were quite advanced, like Egypt, and how did they make the pyramid? So there was a lot of stuff going on that maybe we're not even aware of. We say that we're technologically advanced now. There was all that stuff going on then, too. So I think it's kind of goes through different phases, and we're in this phase that's technologically happening, but yet we've lost the spirituality of it all. And I think this is the beauty of these ancient systems, that they've kept that thread from 10,000 years ago to be very relevant today, because the spirit of man is the same.
Yes, and regarding information and education, early on in your book you write that most of what we've been taught serves those in power over us. And I'm wondering, was there an advanced technique that they had in order to teach these systems inherently in the way the whole thing was set up?
Yeah. Gosh, there's so many techniques. There's not one particular technique. If you look at all the different spiritual methods, there's thousands of them, right? I mean, we know of the basic religious ones like Christianity and Buddhism and Muhammad, Islam and Sufism and all
right.
these
if
different
you,
things.
If you dig, you can find them in those religions.
Well, there's the heart of all of them is basically why I called my book The Only Way Out Is In, is that every spiritual teacher, every spiritual tradition said the only way to connect with true knowledge and wisdom is going inside yourself and connecting with that universal consciousness. So it never changes. See, everything changes all around us, But the seed of that inside of all of us never changes. Everyone has the same seed.
Right.
So it's just a matter of tapping into that and watering it, so to speak, and allowing it to flower. And in that flowering, anything that you ever need to know about what's happening in your life and what you need to do next will happen for you. You're not going to do it like me, thank God. I mean, as you read in my book, I went through a roller coaster ride of all different things and experiencing drugs and sex and this and that and all the different things that kind of got me off track. And it did. I did come back, thankfully, with the grace of God through my yoga practice and meditation. That always kind of brought me back to a place of sanity again, because I went insane many times.
It's interesting that so many of us, it went through the 60s, for instance, with the advent of hallucinogenic drugs becoming part of the mainstream, or that mainstream anyway, we were able, I think it was important for us to be able to get enough outside of the box that had become the norm in order to come back in. Maybe we wouldn't have been able to find our way in if we hadn't bumped out quite a bit.
That's a good way to put it. There's truth in that. There are no accidents. I mean, that era was a time when a lot of people needed and wanted to explore consciousness, and that was their vehicle. Now, the problem with it is that you get dependent on it, you see. And I remember having that. It was like I had this great experience, and lots of colors and amazing things happened, and then I came down, and then I was faced with my everyday life, and then I wanted to do it again.
The same danger exists even when you've got a system that's as pure and beautiful with yoga or Ayurveda,
Exactly right, Robin. Exactly right. See, I even recognized that. I escaped into my meditation and yoga. It was just another drug for me, you know? It was just another way for me to not look at my life. So it followed me around. It was like a shadow. I couldn't outrun my shadow. I had to turn and face and look at a lot of stuff. And so in doing that, I can be at peace now. I looked at my dark side, and I've faced a lot of things, and I'm still looking at things, which is the beauty of it. It's like I'm never bored.
Oh, I know. It's great. I definitely can agree there. It's never boring. And in your book, I love that you did bring out the huge difference between knowledge and information. And when I was sort of writing that idea to ask you about it, I said, can you share your experience with this? And I started laughing because experience is the key right there.
Yeah, definitely. We each have our own personal experience, and that is our own unique path that we have to go through. According to the Indian philosophy, each of us has our own karmic debt or karmic seeds that we have to fulfill in this lifetime. And they say that we've had many different lifetimes. We've been insects, we've been animals, we've been all different kinds of beings. And the human life, the human birth, is such a gift. And some people, they go through this whole life, and they come to the end of their life, and they go, oh, my God, what did I do? I used all my energy in amassing great wealth and all of this information or power, and what good is it? So this is, we have to kind of really look and move with our life the way that it flows. This is the flow of our lives. Okay? Each of us has our own flow. But the core is the same, the witnessing, passive, choiceless passive awareness. This is the way Dr. Ladd used to talk to me about it. Choiceless passive awareness. This is the witnessing consciousness, the power of now, all the different things that we hear about, right?
Right, yes.
This is the beauty of these methods. They direct your attention back. One of the limbs of Ashtanga Yoga is called Pratyahara. Pratyahara. There's eight limbs in Ashtanga Yoga. And the fifth limb of Ashtanga Yoga is called Pratyahara. And Pratyahara means coming back home. Coming back home. Turning your attention and coming back home. Home is where your heart lives and inside yourself. So we're directing our energy outward. We're moving our energy horizontally way too much. That's why we don't have any energy. We're spent. And everybody wants our energy. Our energy is our money. The money that we work so hard for, we spend it on these trivial, stupid things that we think we're going to be happy with. And then we get it, and then we're not happy. So the wealth is the spiritual practice, and this is why we practice every day, continually, all day long. There's a time that we practice, and it's beautiful to set up your day with a meditational practice. That's why I encourage everyone to do that. We do that here in Hawaii, in Kauai, and in Bali. We have a group of people coming every day, 35, 40 people coming and practicing. And then they go off and they do their life.
This is a good intro right now into the Ashtanga and Mysore practice.
Okay.
Of course, there are a lot of people here in Boulder that have studied or know of Ashtanga through Richard Freeman.
He's sure, one of the best and greatest Ashtanga teachers on the planet.
Yeah.
You're so lucky to have him there.
I know, we definitely are. And
yeah, he's a beautiful man.
In your book, you talk about the importance of that Mysore practice and how everyone is an individual. So the yoga practice has to be individualized.
Definitely, definitely. See, this is the misconception that's kind of going on right now with the modern day yoga. It's actually not even yoga anymore. I hate to say it, but
it's
I'm going
okay.
to. I don't hate to say it. I love saying it.
There
because
we
I
go.
Feel that it's so true. As I observe what's going on in all of the situations where there's yoga, it's not truly yoga. It's just kind of aerobic stretching. Okay? Yoga is an individual practice. It's an individual going inside yourself. If someone's standing in the front of the room and saying, do this, do that, don't do that, do this, read like that, but that's for them. And it maybe suits a couple people, but if you have a room of 40 people or 20 people, whatever number it is, you have to get specific and be really clear as to what kind of direction you're giving someone. So in a Mysore Ashtanga practice, Mysore is where the method came from. Mysore, India is south of Bangalore, and it's where Sri K. Pattabhi Joyce lived. He just left his body a few months back. And I was with him for over 30 years. I miss him dearly, and he still is with me. His spirit is there, and he taught me a lot, and I continue to grow with the spirit of what he taught. The Mysore practice is basically a self-practice. You learn the method, the Ashtanga method, which is a sequence of different poses, and they're linked together with breath, which is called vinyasa. Everyone learns the same system, but yet everyone does it quite differently and modified according to them. We just tailor it and make it suitable for each person that comes to us.
I studied with Richard for quite a while, and since that time I've found myself going to various yoga classes for whatever reason, and Ashtanga always just feels like it's the most ancient because it feels the most whole to me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It is. Now, there's a lot of people, again, I love saying this because I like to be clear about what's happening in the world with the whole scene that's happening with yoga. There's a lot of teacher trainings going on, and people are doing teacher trainings in 200 hours, and then they're saying they're a yoga teacher. So there's a lot of teachers out there that have no business teaching yoga, especially Ashtanga yoga, okay? Now, it takes an adept to really get the system of Ashtanga yoga. If you want to teach gentle hatha yoga, okay, fine. But Ashtanga yoga, the system, this ancient system of Ashtanga yoga, really needs to take some time and development with a teacher and daily practice. It comes in your own daily practice. Otherwise, what you do is you go to a workshop or a teacher training, and what do? You're just repeating what that person said. It's not yours. You're like a parrot.
Yes, and that, I think, is going back to where I wanted to go with the difference between knowledge and information and experience, and it's
the experience
that creates knowledge, and that's where all of the religions came from, because it was an experiential thing. It wasn't just go sit and have someone talk to you for an hour and then go home and feel like you were enlightened for the week.
Yeah. No, that's beautiful, Robin. Yeah, exactly. See, Guruji used to talk to us in like little Zen phrases. He would say, practice and all is coming. Okay, great, that's fine. What does that mean? Okay, I kept practicing, and things started to surface and show up. He talked about Mulabandha, this really kind of crazy thing of contracting the perineum and pulling the energy up and not letting your energy leak. He used to talk about that all the time. He said, Mulabandha 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day? I can't even keep Mulabandha for 5 minutes. What are you talking about? But now I get it. I'm starting to get glimpses of what he's talking about. It's a leaking of our energy. So in this experience that I am now having, now I understand what he's talking about. Now I understand what Patanjali is and other mystics, because it is now my experience. So this is what I am asking of students. Don't follow what I'm doing. Do this method, which will take you back to your source, and then you will see what you need to see and have your own enlightened experience, enlightened. Light is coming in. That's all it is. And when you go into a dark room and you flip on the light, the darkness disappears. So it's just a matter of shining more light inside yourself, and then you see everything. Everything is available inside yourself.
Right, and
it's that simple.
I love your play in words throughout the book, the one with involve and evolve.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I love the playing on words. It's so fun.
I know. I play like that with a friend of mine, and he's way into it. It's like, well, if you want more, you're a moron, and then you get a less on.
Or a Klingon.
Right. I wonder if you have a favorite mythical rishi and maybe what that story is.
I love reading various mystical saints and sages. One in particular that I quote all the time, it's my favorite quote. It sums up everything that I could possibly imagine about why we are here. So it goes like this. It's by the mystic saint Kabir. He said, life is not a question. It's not a problem to be solved, but a mystery into which one dissolves oneself. So this is what I feel it's all about. Again, coming back to what you said, it's not about trying to figure it out. You can't. So stop doing it. Stop using your tiny little brain to try to figure stuff out. Einstein did it, and he had the most brilliant mind there was. He delved into the world of science and the mind like that, and he got to the edge of almost insanity because he went so deep into this, and he discovered that he didn't know anything.
I know. I love how he came full circle by the end of it.
The end of his life, he said, I know nothing, and this is what keeps happening. You know, the world of science, they have a more high-powered magnifying glass, and it opens up into something even bigger.
Right, I know. I love that.
It just keeps expanding. This is why they say the universe is constantly expanding. It's infinitely expanding. See, we can't wrap our mind around that. If you look up in the night sky, you can't wrap your mind around space. It just is incomprehensible, not possible. So live in that awe. Live in that awe, in that wow, like a child. All the mystics say, come back to the childlike quality of living in the moment and living in awe of a leaf, of a butterfly floating by, or a wave, or whatever it is, the beautiful face of a child, your partner speaking to you, whatever it is, music, oh my God.
It leaves so much opportunity to be in the moment when you're not trying to figure everything out. That just
exactly,
gets exhausting.
Exactly, and that's what all the saints and sages kept saying. It's endless stories. We could have so many stories, and they're just telling the stories just to kind of satisfy us and appease us with a story. But it's always coming back. It's always the same answer to every single problem is go inside. Go within yourself. That's the answer. It's too simple, you see. It's too simple because the mind wants something complicated, and that's why we have to just watch it. The more we observe how our mind works, we see the folly of it. It always moves us into some weird predicament if we follow it. Now, if you use it as the tool it was meant to be, it's brilliant. It's amazing. Amazing. We need our mind. I need my mind to talk to you on the phone. You needed your mind to dial the phone to get me. So we need to use it as the tool it was meant to be, not the other way around. It's using everyone, and everyone is so full of fear and anxiety, especially right now. And the government and everybody is just pumping people full of fear. Look at the latest thing on the vaccine. You know the vaccine story now? The vaccination, mandatory vaccinations. It's like insane. They want to mandatorily vaccinate people. They're constantly pumping people full of fear, and they create this problem, and then they have the solution. Mysteriously, they come up with a solution. Oh, we got the solution. Just do this, and you'll be fine.
One of the other mysteries in life, right? All of these systems, the yogic, the Ayurvedic, and the tantric system that you write so well about in your book, we can only touch upon them in the interview, but Ayurveda sort of has the same similarity to yoga in that just as when you do Mysore, it's your individual practice.
Mm-hmm.
The Ayurvedic system definitely has that basis of looking at each individual as their own self. But in the standardization, like we talked about, oh, you can go and in a month you're a yoga teacher, or
right.
you can go study Ayurveda for a year and then you put out your shingle. What would you tell someone who is either interested in studying the Ayurvedic system or someone that wants to take advantage of pursuing this method of healthcare? Because especially today, you mentioned earlier that there are dangerous trends in standardization.
Yeah.
And it's touching these systems as well, even though they're born out of that brilliant vastness that allows for lots of possibility.
Yeah, it's true. It's so true. Again, we have to use our innate intelligence. And some people are sheeple. Some people are sheeples. They follow the herd, and they just kind of follow along with the latest whatever. And I hear people spouting off, you take this herb for that, or you do this for that. And it's very important that you learn the principles of Ayurveda. If you learn them, they're not that difficult. Ayurveda, which means the science of life, is all about life and living. Now, how the Ayurvedic system came to be is through deep meditation. So the more that you meditate and quiet your mind, the more that you're in touch with that intuitive source of what to do, and then you are living Ayurveda. Now, it's good to understand the principles and learn the basic principles of Ayurveda, the five-element theory and Vata Pitta Kapha and all these things that when you pick up a book or study with someone, they'll go over that. Now, the basic principles are pretty easy to learn. But again, you got to put them into practice and just observe all of these things that are happening inside you and around you. And out of that, you'll learn it. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of information that's very confusing. It is very specific. And again, this is the beauty of Ayurveda with Ashtanga Yoga, because it is an individual way of looking at your mental, emotional, physical makeup. You're a unique human being, and you need to do certain things for you. Not everybody eat this way or be raw food or this or that. You need to really look and see what kind of elemental makeup you are. Some people are more earthy. Some people are more airy. Some people are more fiery. We need to find that out as an individual, and then we need to match it to bring balance with the outside, taking in food, taking in the sun, taking in the earth energy, taking in our breath. So we get fed many different ways. There's not just one way of being fed. People just think of being fed by the food that they put in their mouth. There's a lot of nourishment going on all around us. The more that we create space within us, then we're able to absorb all of these vitamin, minerals, and subtle components all around us. Prana. Prana is the life force that's in the air, and it's in the food, and it's all around. So we have to be vehicles for absorbing it. We have to get out of the way, basically, so that the prana can come in.
That's such a beautiful point. There is so much more possibility for taking in nourishment than just food and water.
Oh, yeah. It's an important part, and we have to look at that. We can't deny that. But it's a very small percentage. See, most of our eating is very emotional. You know, I love pasta. I'm Sicilian. My bloodline is Sicilian, Antonio Carlisi. So if someone's cooking pasta, I'm like, oh, mama, I love pasta. Right? It's not the greatest thing in the world for me or anyone else, but it's like mother's milk to me.
Sure, yes.
We have this emotional kind of attachment to certain foods. So we need to look at all these things.
In our immediate Boulder audience, Boulder Denver mm-hmm. audience, a lot of people are familiar with the tantric system, either just briefly what it is or obviously more studied about it. And
yep.
What do you think is most misunderstood still in this vast world? I'm just wondering, where is that at?
The greatest misconception about Tantra is that it's only about sex. Now, it's just like most people think about yoga as asana, as posture. That's a misconception. It's not about physical posture. It's about a lot of things. So Tantra always gets labeled as this sexual energy thing. And people don't even, again, there's a lot of people teaching Tantra that have no business doing it. See, our sexual energy is a potent energy. It's the root chakra. There's a lot of energy. There's a lot of potency there. Now, we need to know how to move with that. We need to know how to handle our sexuality. Our sexuality is all confused. I grew up as a Catholic, so you can...
Say no more.
I could go into that for a whole interview. So there's a lot of contradictory... you know, impressions that we got early on. So we feel this guilt and we feel this anxiety and we get together with a partner. Sexual energy is just our creative energy that's there, lying latent. It's laying kind of dormant and it gets stimulated. And the only way out for it is to go out for a man out through the penis or the lingam. That's the closest avenue. He doesn't know what to do with it. So in Tantra, they teach you in this one aspect of it, the sexual aspect, is how to move your energy out of your genitals and move it and spread that energy through your whole body so you have an orgasm without ejaculating. And out of that, you build this nourishing energy, which is called ojas. And ojas in Ayurveda is your juice. It's like your life juice. It's like the sap of a tree. If you're constantly milking a tree and all the sap is going out of it, The branches wither, the leaves wither, the roots wither. So that's what's happening with a lot of men. Now, on the women, they need to get in contact with their sexual energy and all the things that are happening with women, and just a healing needs to take place.
Many thanks to Anthony Prem Carlisi. The only way out is in. It's true, folks, and it's also the title of his book. Prem@ashtangaworld.com is how to reach him regarding all of his work. For any guest information, to listen to archives and share resources, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.